This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans, or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a grand celebration of a legendary American playwright, or a global music experience, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The Crescent City is ground zero this week for the 28th annual Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary Festival, which kicks off 5 days of festivities in and around the French Quarter beginning tomorrow. This year, there are a bevy of theater offerings honoring Williams, who adopted New Orleans as his spiritual home. And joining me to talk about the exciting lineup is festival spokesman David Hoover, who heads UNO's Department of Film and Theater. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We are celebrating Tennessee Williams this week in many ways with works inspired by or dedicated to the legendary playwright. What is it that endears us so to his works?
I think one of the great things is we that love New Orleans and the outsiders that come in for the festival who love New Orleans, his plays are infused with the spirit of New Orleans. I think filtered through his brilliant mind and his brilliant skills as a writer. But I think you feel New Orleans, and I think that's one of the things that attract us as an audience to his work. It's got that sultry feel. It always has a mystery about it.
And the city surely attracted him.
Oh, absolutely. He called it his spiritual home. You know, he's originally from St. Louis, and being an original Midwesterner, it always hurt my feelings. He hated St. Louis, just absolutely hated it. But when he came to New Orleans, he really found his true muse.
Now, there are some exciting additions to the festival this year. I understand we have some unique venues.
We have a very special event on Wednesday evening that sort of kicks off the festival. It's a fundraiser. It's called the Hotel Plays, and it's a series of plays that are going to be performed at the Herman Grima House, and the audience will move from room to room to see each of the different plays. It should be a very exciting evening in the French Quarter for this special event.
How cool is that? These are some of the maybe lesser-known works of Tennessee?
Well, they're a little bit of a combination. You've got Green Eyes, which is probably considered his kinkiest one-act play. And, you know, you have Mr. Paradise, which is another very intriguing piece, The Traveling Companion. I will say they are certainly part of that canon of Williams that is lesser known, that people experience usually in written form versus being able to see it in performance.
And the major works, which ones are we likely to experience?
The NOLA Project on the Le Petit stage, which we're also very thrilled to be back in that wonderful historic space, is going to be presenting Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, one of his greatest plays. And then in the special location on Elysian Fields, Southern Rep is going to be performing The Night of the Iguana. So you have two of his really just paramount productions of plays that are revived on a regular basis. They're revived on Broadway. They're revived even locally. We've had two productions of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. But the NOLA Project's going to be putting their special spin on the one that's at Le Petit, which should be a great thing to be able to revisit the historic Le Petit Theater, which we haven't had available to us for a while.
I hear actress Diane Ladd is in town for a special reading of Tennessee's letters and essays. Is there a family connection there?
Absolutely. She is his cousin. She's going to be part of an evening on Saturday night that actually I'm very excited about because I get to be part of it as well. And we're going to have Julia Reed and festival president Janet Duvall and, of course, Diane Ladd. We're doing several readings from his letters that are specifically drawn from and to and about New Orleans. I think the great thing about this kind of material when we do it for the festival is it gives you such an insight to him as a person. The writings are just brilliant and wonderful, and they're theatrically just amazing.
And there's something else that's close to your heart, and it always draws a big crowd, and that's the one-act play contest.
One of our missions in the Department of Film and Theater, we love producing the previous year's winner, and we also do the selection of this year's winner, and we do a concert reading of that production. This year's winner is a play called The Art of Conversation by Matt Bagance. And forgive me, Matt, if I'm mispronouncing your name. I haven't met you yet. But we're also going to be producing Father by Frederick Minch. And that's a full production that we'll do, last year's winner. You know, our past one-act play winners have gone on to become Pulitzer Prize winners in one case. So it's a very exciting time when you see a playwright who's in sort of the early part of their career, and we get a chance to perform one of their early works. And you never know if we're going to be producing a future Pulitzer Prize winning author.
Can you give us a little insight into the play by this year's winner?
It's a very interesting piece, The Art of Conversation, and it's a university professor who goes to a dinner party of his wives, and he has some issues with conversation in social settings. He tends to pick it apart. And there's a little bit of a surprise when you realize that all the party guests at the end are not real, that this has been a practice session with his wife and himself in trying to make him a better social conversationalist. It's an interesting play, actually. It's very funny, very insightful, and it's got little twists in it that are really fun.
And this will get a reading this year?
Yes, this year we'll do a concert read of it.
And last year's winner?
Last year's winner, Father, is a very interesting play about a brother and a sister who show up at the funeral of their estranged father, who left them very young, and you find out that there was some abuse involved, and he went on and had a second family. And it's sort of about the brother and sister's relationship at the funeral of their father and coming to terms with some issues that they have that are unresolved. It's a really interesting little piece. It had a very nice run at UNO, and we're excited to bring it down to the festival.
And things wind down on Sunday with a reenactment of an unforgettable scene from A Streetcar Named Desire in Jackson Square. Tell us about this shouting contest.
Oh, my goodness. This has to be one of the favorite events of the festival. It's very funny. We have Stanley's and Stella's coming out to give us their best shout through a panel of celebrity judges that have been at the festival during the course of the week. And it's pure silliness. There's a crowned winner, and it's always interesting to see how far some of these contestants will go to win this prize.
Now, if Tennessee were here today, David, what do you think he would say about this annual tribute?
I think that he would be probably a little bit dismayed at all the attention provided to him, but I think what he would love is all of the New Orleans quality of it. He would love the Stanley and Stella contest. I think he would think that that was an absolute hoot. But I think that part of what he would love is what goes on in and around all of the events, you know, the socializing, the venues, enjoying the French Quarter, all those things that he loved when he was alive in New Orleans, I think are things that he would absolutely love at the festival as well.
Yeah. David, thanks.
Thank you.
The 28th Annual Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary Festival kicks off tomorrow and runs through Sunday in and around the French Quarter. For more information, you can visit the website tennesseewilliams.net. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm Diane Mack. Everyone knows about Jazz Fest, which is owned by the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation. But did you know there are other festivals year-round that are produced by the foundation? One of them comes up this weekend. It's the Congo Square New World Rhythms Fest, celebrating the music and culture of the African diaspora. And joining me now to talk about this musical celebration, Scott Ages with the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and musician Jonah Tobias of Buku Brew. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you so much.
The Congo Square New World Rhythms Festival is celebrating its seventh year, a relatively new festival in the city. Scott, tell us, how did it begin?
The foundation has a long history of producing what we used to call street festivals, free events that would take place all around town. And after Katrina, we expanded those programs greatly in size and scope, mostly in an effort to provide some new employment opportunities for our local musicians and help bring folks home after the storm. So we created four festivals. The Congo Square Rhythms Festival was one of them, and that is our effort to celebrate the music of the African diaspora and to also get people to go to Congo Square and to embrace that sacred ground and understand the cultural significance of that area.
Now, most of us have concrete ideas when we hear musical categories like jazz, blues, swing, and rock and roll, but New World Rhythms, what exactly is that?
Well, what we're trying to do is kind of musically illustrate the migration of the culture, if you will, from Africa across the Atlantic, through the Caribbean, and up into the Gulf South. So the music that we present is a little bit of all of that. So that's why we have music from Africa, Cuba, Haiti, and also different styles of American Southern music, including New Orleans music, and all the way up through contemporary hip-hop.
What are we likely to hear, and from which groups?
We've got the incredible band Boukman Experience from Haiti. We have a fantastic singer and instrumentalist from Mali named Kokanko Sata, who's going to perform actually both days at the festival. She's a mesmerizing performer. In hip-hop, we've actually got four amazing acts. The legendary producer and DJ Manny Fresh. We've got D1, who is very much an up-and-coming rapper on the national scene. 3D Nati, who is a New Orleans rapper who is also about to blow up in a really big way. And Currency, who's already huge, a Warner Brothers recording artist. There's a great New Orleans band that plays a diverse array of styles called Bambula 2000. We have a group from Cuba that actually lives here, but they're all natives of Cuba called Los Caballeros del Son. So they're going to perform, and that'll help us cover our Caribbean bases. And we've got this great group that not everybody knows about yet called Buku Brew that we're very excited about.
Yes, and Jonah Tobias is a part of Buku Brew. Tell us about your group and the sound that you're bringing to this festival.
We're a trio. I play a modified instrument. It's called the kora. It's from Mali, from West Africa. And my version of it is a home built here in New Orleans by me. And it's a bass version. You know, the instrument itself kind of wants to be played in a certain way, and it lends itself to some African rhythms. And there's definitely a lot of African music influence in what we do. But on the other hand, we're also influenced by whatever music, you know, is coming to us, whatever the city around us is. And besides myself, we also have a Brazilian percussionist from Sao Paulo. His name's Fernando Lima, and he does some great subtle Brazilian dynamics and really interesting playing. And we have Philip Silve on alto saxophone, who's actually in the jazz studies program here in New Orleans. I guess the best way to just describe the sound would be probably New Orleans world fusion.
And the instrument itself, this is a harp-like instrument from West Africa. Describe it for us and talk about the variations you made, because yours is electric.
Yeah, the kora is a beautiful instrument. The first time I heard it, I was at a music festival, just a white boy from Rhode Island at a music festival, and and man, it tore me up. It tore me up, and I said, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard. I got to play this. I can't believe I haven't heard it before. So I did. I started playing after that. So the person I saw was named Yusufa Sidibe. Shout out to Yusufa Sidibe. His music is amazing. You should check it out. He actually plays with Charles Neville sometimes, so he's got a New Orleans connection as well. So I heard it from him, and from that point on, I purchased one, and then I built this by replacing the neck and the bridge. And this is a bass version. This is basically, yeah, this is some power tools. This is the original body, the gourd, the kora. So this is radio, so I should describe it maybe.
Yeah, because this instrument is about 5'10", I believe.
Right. So imagine in your mind's eye, the bottom of it is a giant gourd, like a giant pumpkin. It's called a calabash gourd. That's wrapped around by cowhide. So it's kind of like half the gourd. So on the other side, then, there's a bridge sticking up. And from that, if you can imagine, there's 25 strings that then elongate to that's the big board that sort of, you know, holds the tension. And that's guitar tuners and bass guitar tuners. I don't know if this picture is getting across, but it's interesting.
It's
and
beautiful.
It's different. And thank you. Yeah, I think so.
And Scott, how did you hook up with Jonah?
About 3 years ago, I was actually in my car cruising from the French Quarter toward the Bywater, and I crossed Frenchman Street, and I saw this white kid playing this thing that looked like a kora with a 2x4 sticking out of it for the neck. And he's jamming on what sounded like a fusion of crazy fusion jazz and Led Zeppelin. And with him and a drummer and a tip jar out on the street. And I looked at this and I was like, holy cow, this kid built himself a kora out of a 2x4? He's got to get on the Congo Square Festival. That's just too perfect. It's like this perfect symbol of that fusion of the African and the New World, and somebody that was embracing that instrument and that style and taking it new directions. To me, just that was just everything that we were looking for. But I didn't have time to stop at that moment, and so I couldn't, like, introduce myself and get his number and all that kind of thing. And I didn't know how to find him. And nobody that I knew his name or his number. I kept asking people, hey, you seen that kid with the homemade kora with the 2x4? And nobody knew what I was talking about.
So mysterious.
And then about 3 or 4 months ago, I got an email out of the blue from Jonah. And he says, hey, you don't know me, but I've got this band and we play the kora. And I was like, wait a second, yeah. That's the guy.
Well, Jonah, can you play something for us?
Yeah, absolutely.
Got to watch out for the ceiling.
Beautiful.
Fantastic.
Was that an original tune?
Yeah, we call that song The Reckoning.
Tell me about that and how you came to write it.
Probably something from some Lil Wayne song, it would be my guess.
Really?
The normal writing process is listen to some music, scroll through YouTube, hear something somebody's doing, whether they're singing it, if it's, you know, melody and rhythm that they're singing, if they're playing it on guitar, synthesizer, whatever it may be. And then putting it to the kora, and the kora has its own direction to go with it. And I suppose the outcome doesn't sound anything like Lil Wayne, but that's Lil Wayne to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow. Just beautiful. Really awesome.
Just appreciate it. Hey, all right.
Now, Scott, in addition to all this wonderful music, there is one other band I think you wanted to mention.
Yes, I forgot to mention that there's a band coming in from New York called Red Barat. They played for us last year, actually. They were one of our headliners, and they were so great that we invited them back. And they're a bit different for us because they're not actually out of the African diaspora tradition. If anything, they're more from South Asia. The members of the band are from the Punjab area and some other places. But they have this kind of crazy, funky mixture of South Asian traditional music with New Orleans brass band. So when I saw them at Tipitina's a couple of years ago, I was like, oh, man, I know these guys aren't African, but it doesn't matter. They're great. We got to have them. They'd be a perfect fit for the festival. So they're coming back to play Red Barat.
Now tell me, Scott, how is the foundation able to keep the festival free?
These are your Jazz Fest dollars at work. What most people don't realize is that when you go to Jazz Fest, when you buy a ticket, when you buy a T-shirt, you buy a poster, you buy a softshell crab po' boy, whatever it may be, that festival is owned by a nonprofit foundation whose role is to take the money from the festival and spread it around through in the community in various ways all year long with education programs, economic development programs, and cultural enrichment programs. And so these are all part of our give back to the community.
Yeah. Jonah, can you play us one more song?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Jonah Tobias of Buku Brew on the electric kora. And Scott Aegis with the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Diane.
Hey, thank you very much. And can I just mention, if you'd like to come see us, please do come to the festival. It's an honor to be part of such a great group of international musicians. And also Marigny Brasserie on Frenchman Street every Friday and Saturday night from 9:30 to 12. We'll be there.
The New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation presents the 7th annual Congo Square New World Rhythms Fest, Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. until 7 p.m. in Armstrong Park, 901 North Rampart Street. More info at congosquarerhythms.com. You can see a photo of Jonah Tobias and his homemade kora at wwno.org. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.